You are listening to Fika with Vicky on United Public Radio, 107.7 and 105.3 from New Orleans.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Fika. Today, I've invited author Brian Greiner to join me for a candid melange of book topics. Brian, as you know, has been on Fika before. We've discussed two of his series, The Saga of Bob and The Accursed North, and don't forget Haiku Cat. But what you may not know about Brian is that he has retired from the software development biz and loves to experiment with different writing tools and processes. He is the king of links and helpful suggestions. So we decided to experiment with Fika today and take on some subjects that circle around and round, unscripted and raw. We make no claims to be experts on any of the subjects we discuss, just two friends that respect each other, despite sometimes having differences of opinion, because that is what Fika is all about. Thanks for all the support you've given Fika with Vicky, Brian, and welcome.
Oh, thank you, Vicky. I suppose I should apologize to your listeners and to your watchers for the size of my head on the screen. I thought I had it right, and some other software, it looks perfectly normal.
I guess it is abnormal. A thing. It is a thing, but more of you, Brian, can never be a problem. Robin's already popped in with a good morning. He's out west. Good morning, Vicky and Brian. And yay, it's Brian. You have such a fan in Robin.
Good. Hi, Robin.
My feelings just get hurt so much every time. Every time you show up. So where do we want to start, Brian? You're the guest. I'll let you...
Yeah, this was kind of a last minute throw together thing. Vicky and I each came up with some ideas, threw them at each other, and I guess the show is where we see what gets sticky. One of the things is that Vicky mentioned was that I like to look at different writing tools of various sorts. For one thing, it's really nifty. I'm a nerdy kind of guy, so anything that involves process and tools is a wonderful thing. And as a writer, procrastination is a wonderful thing too. some things, Vicky and I have spoken in the past about AI and this automatic generation of stuff, but this isn't a new thing. Like back in the 20s, 30s, 40s, when the pulp magazines were huge, there were dozens of magazines, and each magazine needed dozens of stories every month. And this is on top of what the movies needed, because he said these movie studios churning out movies at a breakneck pace for very small amounts of money, and the writers had to come up with ways of generating new and interesting plots. So several of them came up with methods ranging from a generic short story template done by a gentleman by the name of Lester Dent. He wrote the Doc Savage series, or he invented the character and wrote many, but not all of the series. And he came up with a... template for writing a 6,000 word short story, which was the norm in those days. And I'm just looking at my notes here. He said to divide it into four 1,500 word chapters. Basically, the first chapter is you introduce the hero and his problem. Then the hero gets into more trouble, and there's probably a bit of a plot twist. And the third scene is the hero's in even more trouble, but starts to make progress.
So just to clarify, just because we didn't say this right off the bat, these they had to put the formulas out there like as fast as AI does, but they were human formulas done by humans because that technology was only available in the science fictions at that point. So this is one of the ways they would do that, saying AI isn't needed. We can do it ourselves. It's basically what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, it had, you know, as it was done is by the pulp writers. And these are, I should mention, I should end this one thing, a dense thing. And in the fourth scene, their hero would work through, defeat the bad person, and there'd be probably a pulp as a plot twist, and then a final conclusion. And, you know, you think about it, and that's what a lot of these stories were. Now, these are people, typically male, as it must be said, who were churning out hundreds of thousands, even millions of words per year. And they had to come up with a new idea.
But when you think about it, that's not much different than a curve. A curve is not a writing curve, a character learning curve, the story curve. Mm-hmm. It's just a little more elaborated than that. But that is the basic, get it in there, get it out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Kind of thing.
And it... people were focused on being good storytellers, but also fast storytellers. And the ones that could do a lot of words could make a good living at it. Not like now. You know, they were being paid, you know, in the 30s, maybe 2 or 3 cents a word. Then it got to be 5 to 10 cents a word, which is pretty much what it is now. But, you know, as a prolific writer could make a darn good living. But only if you could come up with new things. And another writer, there were any number of these so-called methods. Of course, the writers would then put them into a book and then sell the books.
as well as the stories. When you're going at that speed, very much. You don't, when we talk about the authors at that time being perhaps problematic with different things, you didn't have, they didn't take time to consider the feelings involved or the deeper consequences of what they were doing. They were simply getting the story out there. And
a lot of them, yeah. It was just, they, in many ways, they were reflections of their times. And now when I speak about the pulp writers, I'm speaking mainly about the professionals. They made their living at it. And there were people that came up with other methods. There are a number of sites that talk about all these different methods. And I suppose here's as good a place as any to mention that I have links to a number of these sites as a blog post on my blog. You know, you can get down into the weeds. It's just absolutely fascinating, all the different ways that people had. One of the more popular ones was called the Plot Genie. A gentleman broke down plots into very fine detail. And he basically said, he broke it down into 9 or 10 things. And then you basically generated a random number between 1 and 180, which is what he chose in that category. And then you'd come up with this random plot. And he claimed this was better than just sitting down and thinking because it got you out of your comfort zone. It got the juices flowing in new and different ways.
And you have to make that work. That's why.
Yeah.
It isn't like it's an automatic work. If you go around cheating, it's not going to make you do that, but you have to do the work of making it work.
Yeah. Well, turning the basics of the plot into a full-fledged story, whether that story was a short story or a screenplay. Because you think back, there's a lot of the schlocky movies from that era. They were schlocky for a reason, because these were writers churning this stuff out for the hundreds of thousands and millions of words a year. Somebody would call them up and say, I need a story about a mad scientist. Make it so.
And
by the way, I need it Monday.
Referencing other scientific TV shows.
Yeah.
It's true. If you because we don't need that in writing. There are so many writers out there, it isn't funny. And so in this category, only we'll just take on this category. But I've been wanting to ask a question anyways, and Dave has brought it up because he thinks he's funny. Okay, so when people make themselves, and Brian doesn't need any of those things because he's got brains, baby, okay? So when people make themselves look 20 years younger and chop off the cheeks and hire the cheekbones and stuff, is that AI?
It could also be plastic surgery.
Yeah, not in reality.
Oh, you're talking about
tweaking
pictures. There are different ways of doing it. Like there's been Photoshop, which is the original program, but there are programs like that where you can lengthen your faces, you can carve out hollows in the cheekbones, change the shape of your eyes, put hair on your head. I remember I did that to a boss who was balding one time, and that's probably a career limiting move.
It's just think of make it so. I understand that those things are accepted, right?
Yeah. AI takes it to a different level. But you know, let's not forget what AI is. It's not intelligent. What it is, it's a prediction program. It's like the spell check or you know, what's the next word? It's when you're typing a message on your cell phone. That is what current AIs do. They, based on what they've seen, this is what they predict will happen next. It's just statistics. It's not intelligence per se.
So do you believe that it can get to the point of feeling and, you know, the experiences that one wants to find in a book? The feelings and experiences.
Hell no.
No. Thank you. Because I have argued on this side. I don't think it can. I don't think you can. I can't even repeat somebody else's experiences.
Yeah. Well, no, it can fake it to a limited extent in that if it's been trained on a bunch of romance novels of a certain type of romance and you say, write me this certain type of romance that takes place in such and such a place. Well, it can predict what it should be writing and it'll come up with something. And it might be good here and there, but these AI programs can't do long works. Because they have no sense of context. So things can get wibbly wobbly and wild after three or four sentences. Not only that, the books that they're trained on, now there's another can of worms. The promoters of AI say, oh, well, we've trained our model on umpteen a gazillion words, which is more than a human being can read in a lifetime. Well, they trained it, but they basically stole the work.
It's about when we get into the evils of AI, it's not the machines. It's the people behind the machines, okay? Yeah. And what it, the true evil is that it will hopefully, they're hoping, not the rest of us, that it's going to take all the money and put it into like a very few hands.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So I found this one. I did see a link on Walrus, and I'll put that link up on my Facebook tomorrow, of all the authors that it has stolen from. and to teach it to do this and their opinions of it and what they thought of it. And but they should know that. And apparently there's a book out with all of that in. But they should know that reading that article brought to me many authors that I didn't know about before. So go in there and find a writer's list, because so it is the theft of the work, not the fear that it's going to overtake the real writing world. It's the theft itself. Now we have a comment.
That's not entirely true. It's theft in that it's theft of copyright. Like, they're not paying the authors what they're owed.
Right. So it's theft but in of terms, copyright.
But it's to reduce. In the publishing world, they just want to churn out product that they figure will sell, and they don't care what it is. They don't care about quality. And it doesn't even have to make sense.
Ever though. That has been there forever with, well, you said, like the formula writers.
Yeah.
Or, but those are also what is taking away is training fields, because that is also the place where people get to train to hone the art and still make a little bit of money. Yeah. So, you know, look.
That's something that we don't have anymore, really. No,
because we have the big pig. Yes, Robin is. Why don't you just
Robin.
Go and do the Robin show? Okay, no, I'm just teasing Robin.
What do you think, Brian? Oh, sorry, I'll let you read it.
No,
I get to see it too, Robin. Which is
the first thing he did say is apologize for going off topic. And as I've explained to him before, this is not a problem here. So, Robin wants to know from Brian, what do you think, Brian, of the story writing of the modern movies and shows of today's world?
Depends on the show. I'm not trying to be flip. It's just that I'm old. I am in my early 70s. And I grew up when a lot of TV was total and utter crap. Like the 70s and 80s, the writing of the shows there, the production quality was jaw-droppingly, mind-achingly bad. So my idea of bad writing is probably, I've seen the depths, and that's what AI wants to go to and lower. I don't watch a lot of TV anymore. Movies, sure. Anything that comes on, is a streaming service, as I'll watch, even if it's a hokey science fiction, because you can have a low budget movie, but it's done with good acting and a decent script, and it can rise above what it is.
Well, I think that's what's happening with the indie film industry. We're going back to a time where the story mattered, and not that I don't like streaming stuff now. There's some really good stuff out there, but when it comes to Brian's viewing and actually mine, all I have to do is hum Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
Now there's a quality indie movie as of its day. There's a sequels where, well,
no, I never watched the sequels. I think I watched.
The first sequel was brilliant. It was sort of like the first movie done with a slightly higher budget.
Then it just.
But it had a very young George Clooney in it. So if you want to.
First of all, Robin,
to answer your question, it's highly variable. But I think that technology is is a multi-edged blade, and as much as it takes away, it gives the indies more power than they ever had to make something good, even if it's low budget.
And the indie industry is, I mean, the movie industry is, but the indie industry itself is everywhere. So it can pick up on the nuances of any culture or the people by being exactly there filming it.
It's what you said, Vicky. One of the finest examples of an indie artist of indie work can be found in cartoons, or used to. There was a Canadian program called Reboot, and they basically did animation on computers that had less power than our cell phones. And it was a bit crude, but the writing and the voice acting were utterly superb. They made cultural references, but there was enough action that it would appeal to the kids and enough wit and depth that it would appeal to the adults. And I think, Robin, that's the sort of thing that we should be celebrating is shows that managed to achieve that.
So
it's very hard to do.
What I was thinking when we brought up this subject is this opens up a whole different market. This opens up, as you said, when you do the genie, you got to make whatever he puts out there works. Well, life is the same way. So this could lead a lot of people to open up opportunities in these fields where I am human. Even marketing. Like I was thinking the other day. So you can do a crossover marketing with other writers saying, I am human. And this is verified by 5 other writers. And then they can put their social media addresses on there. People can write to them and say, are they a real person? Put yourself
5 other AIs. Sure.
No, I thought about that. But if we then do that with personal appearances, for example, a lot of people don't like, writers don't like to put themselves out there because they are quiet people. Brian, once upon a time, did not want to put himself out there. Now, having done Fika, he has another broadcast that is stealing him away, Robin. So we just have to be out there more personably, I think, and find other ways, because it's like the crafting breweries, all of those things took mass production and turned it into something special from the neighborhood. And I think we might have to look at that. Put all the writers in a little glass jar with them typing away. So you can see it's a handwritten story. Well,
that's sort of reminds me, Vicky, just a few years ago, our community had an area open house, and my ward counselor said, Brian, you should have a table because you're a writer. So anyway, I went and I piled up with my books, and there was this lady came by with her little kids, I don't know, 5, 6, I can't tell. And she said, look, dear, there's a writer.
See? It's not because
I felt like something in it.
But you are unique even then, Robin. I'm Robin. Brian, you're a specimen. You are now becoming one in my mind. Okay. Author Susan Marcus, very serious. Is there any way to find AI copyright theft?
That would take a lawsuit, I would think. And I believe there are some.
But the end becomes, how much of your life do you want to put into this? They have big bucks and can let it.
And how deep are your pockets? Sad, but it comes down to a case of who can influence the lawmakers, influence in various ways, not just by money, although that does change hands, I'm sure, but come up with arguments while blocking the other side's arguments. Lawsuits are the only ways that it's.
And we have, books were stolen before in various other ways. With plagiarism, whatever. And I have to keep thinking of the author Paulo Coelho. Vicky. The Alchemist.
I don't think that's the name of the author.
No, The Alchemist. I should have that on the tongue. It was stolen quite often. And he actually thanked his the pirates. He said, always be thankful of pirates, because this actually pushed him to be one of the best sellers for many years, because people would get it and they loved it and they would want their own copy.
Yep.
So he started putting it out for free himself.
By others. Now, yeah. to answer Susan's question, the problem with the AI is it doesn't even give the recognition that pirates do as to the original author. AI says the original authors don't matter. We'll use their words as a raw material and not give credit. The pirates at least will have the original author's name.
On the book. Yeah. This is true. And it's going to take even more faith, I think, that writing has always taken to do this. Because, you know, you never know where it's going to go to or where it's going to end up. But still, should we stop writing?
No. Well, I won't because I have to. The sickness.
Not because someone's standing over him like in misery, but
the voices in my head won't shut up.
they're lovely voices, Brian. Robin and Dave, I see all your comments, but I think you're beginning to talk to each other now. So have fun. Okay.
one point about AI is because it's just a blind statistical chance. It's a throwing of the dice. They can only output what they put in. And there's a lot of questionable attitudes out there. And this is something that has been found, is that the AI will generate responses that are problematical, shall we say. Because
even more so than the real people?
It's a shock because people expect better, but it's the old thing that programmers have been saying for decades: garbage in, garbage out. And at least if there's a person, you can recognize that person as garbage. But then that begs the question: how do you separate the garbage personality from what could be brilliant work? To my mind, one of the biggest or best examples of that is H.P. Lovecraft. He created a whole genre of horror, cosmic horror. You know, he invented Cthulhu and all these ancient godlike beings. And he freely shared it with people. He said, fine, you want to use my creations? Go ahead. He corresponded with many authors of his day, to the point where a number of people said that his own writing suffered because he spent so much time being a fanboy. But as a person, he had some utterly abhorrent views. He was racist. He was in a very nasty way. I came up with some links, which are in that list of links on my blog post.
There's a lot of science fiction and fantasy writers in there. So I haven't read a lot of those books. That's Brian's area of expertise. But yeah, he'll have them on there. And he looks into, for example, you brought up
Asimov.
Everything Orson. Yeah, I'm going to talk about him because I want to know. But you brought up Robert
Heinlein, yes.
Yes. So I did read his links so that we would be equal, have an idea of information. And I actually just put this book out in my little library yesterday, free little library. I've been meaning to show it because I thought the cover was cool and they got it on a free table. And I've been meaning to show it to Brian forever. And I just keep forgetting to do it, saying, do you know this guy? So I threw it in there yesterday, 2 days ago, read his article and went running down and got it out again. Not from fear, mostly for this show. But this is the thing where, so you have a list and you said this one isn't one of the worst ones. And
yeah, that's one of his fantasies, and his fantasies tended to be just for fun. Whereas a lot of his science fiction, he philosophized. He colored the narrative with his political and philosophical views, some of which are not so much foul as tacky.
About women things like that, right?
Yeah. Although, having said that, a lot of his women were strong women. Strong, independent women. But in the end, they always became subservient to the hero. So it was very much of his era. And he had some other less savory points of view. Whether he actually acted on them, I don't know. But some of his
I don't think so. Not with everything that I looked at. I mean, he wrote so many books, he wouldn't have gotten out to do anything.
Oh, he got out, but
No.
From what I can gather, I think it was basically with consenting adults, which is fair game.
It is a yucky time, okay? The 70s, in the women starting to 60s, work. 50s, so why 40s. Can't they work and make me money and satisfy my other every whim? So there was that hole. So you want to be sexually free, honey? I can help you with that. Wink, wink. Going on, which is just ugh. So yes, not only was the polyester yucky, but there was a lot of
free love, as it was called.
Yeah, I don't care about that as long as the it doesn't bohemian have lifestyle. That, yeah, at least if it's organic and it's actually believed and it's just not just being used to further someone else's pleasure meter.
Agenda.
Yeah, their agenda. So that is the yucky, the lack of honesty and moving in to do that. I think it's before we go there. Okay, Brian, stop. I have lots to think. One, and I want to get back to the AI too, because it has some ideas in there. One, a lot of the cases that you brought up and a lot that I have seen, and I don't want to center, I'm just curious. This is just yapping, Vicky. I'm not going after anybody. We're in sort of like the science fiction, the fantasy, the horror. Do you think that it is possibly easier for them to express these things in a world of their own making without expressing these things, if you know what I'm saying?
To a certain extent, certainly. And if it's kept on paper, then it becomes icky, but nothing more. Some of them went from beyond the printed page to the real world.
Yeah, I think I have to add something
now. And so, I don't want to get too deep into it because it can be triggering for a lot of people.
Well, I'm going to bring up that book, Brian, because I think it has to be brought up and a lot of people skirt it. So I'm going to use
one more thing. Some of these people, I'm sure, were decent folks, but then they got a little bit of fame, a little bit of power. We've all seen it in the rock and roll music world. Where people get some fame and fortune and they go nuts. And it's the same thing for writers.
But I think you have to have an element of that in your soul to begin with. Okay, because it's not just their fault. People worship celebrities and give them full carte blanche to do what they want to.
And they have license.
That has to stop. So, okay.
And that's what happened to Asimov, I think.
We'll go there.
As in others, they had a degree of fame. They had a fan community that was niche.
Well, if I put his books in the little library, they go in 2 seconds flat. Like, they're gone. But I live outside of a college.
His books were okay. It's his personal life that was tacky as hell. Again, Asimov was an interesting case because he was a psychological basket case who learned to live in the real world reasonably well, but not entirely well. He got into pinching ladies' bottoms, for example. As far as crimes go.
Well, but we have to also understand, we're learning more about how dementia and those things affect the mind when people get older.
Yeah.
I mean, well, are learning more about...
This was not a dementia thing. This was
okay.
Just...
This brings me to my point. We need to stop putting people on wet pedestals, washing them, and giving them carte blanche in the world of our lives. We are not touching the robes of gods. We're holding on to an image of a real person, which is often naive and usually unwise. We need to stop romanticizing our childhood memories. You got me talking fast, and now it's not talking good, Brian. Once you're past your childhood, of course, and realize it was nice to visit, but you wouldn't want to live there. Mm-hmm. And that all people are imperfect, whether they're artists, singers, writers, professors, or politicians. We need to just stop this. People put their children in danger. They do all of these things because someone happens to be... someone they think is, I don't get it. Okay, I don't, because everybody is the same to me. I don't care. Brian, you start pinching women's bottoms. I'm going to talk to
Lynn. If I start behaving like Isaac Asimov, my wife would gut me like a fish.
I was going to say, we're going to talk to Lynn, and we're going to. So, yes, there is, first of all, I think, okay, I'm going to say this. There's a lot of content writers out there, and they get money for clicks. And clicks happen faster when people are angry on both sides. So I do believe some of this stuff is going round and round and round because it gives people content, and it gets people riled up. And so don't let it. You don't have to be team anybody. You can just observe and listen and learn. That's what I think, Brian. So,
is in terms of fame, if somebody says that they really liked my books, great.
No, I'm not.
If they want to buy me a coffee, even better.
No, but that's gratitude and that's thank you. It's like me putting authors on the show. That is, but I research or try to research everybody as much as I can before, even when putting someone's quote on Facebook or I'm sorry, I shouldn't have known. On any social media, I try to research that person and make sure it's their quote, but I try to research who they were behind that.
Well, and yet you have me on more than once.
And yet, because you are a good to the core person, annoying sometimes, but still good to the core, Brian. Okay, on another note, I am going to bring this up because I think it's been skirted around. I think it needs to be said, and I think that it owes, it brings the perspective of someone having problematic ideas and someone committing evil deeds and separating the author from the book in those things. It's not always easy to study. I'm going to read this so I can get it over with fast. And plus I'm going to point out something I did that I need some context behind because otherwise I'll be in a lot of trouble. So I'm going to bring up this book, Mists of Avalon by Marion Zimmer Bradley, because I think it balances the concept of problematic ideas as opposed to vile actions and clarifies those perspectives. I don't want to get into describing the whys and wherefores. It's triggering, upsetting, and really unnecessary because you simply have to search and you'll find the details. I will put a link on my Facebook page tomorrow. I'm just going to say this so there is context behind my strong reaction to it. Ideologically based child molestation perpetrated. I actually burned Mists of Avalon. I couldn't have it in the house. I couldn't give it away. It needed to go. So one night when we were having a bonfire, I slipped it in. I slipped many negative things into the bonfire and find it cleansing. So, I can't remember when I read it, but it was obviously after 2014. Being older, it left me with a really unsettling feeling as I read, so I looked it up. And sometimes you can't separate the writer from the book. And to me, this is one of those cases. So I think when we're getting very angry with things, we have to put into perspective that some things are people that can no longer hurt us. They can with our words, but we're not giving them the money. I mean, if anybody's in public domain and you're going back there to research and find out what everything is about, it's not giving any money in their pockets. Right? I'm over my anger now, Brian. I'm not going to throw you in the fire.
Yeah, I mean, it's a number of interesting issues. Can we separate the creator from their work? At what times do we sanction, if I can use that word?
I don't.
As a writer, do we sanction them for thought crimes, or do we sanction them for physical acts in the physical world?
Do we sanction? But I think that it has to come down to a personal point of view. When I did that, I did not call a rally. I did not ask my neighbors what their opinions were and give them the book so that they could make one. I simply acted on what I felt in that moment. So I think a lot of these decisions cannot be made in a group think, because everybody has different experiences. Everything will trigger people differently. You know, sometimes issues that are both important will brush against each other. So there is not going to be an agreement. So I don't think any of us can answer that for anyone. It has to be for you.
Having said that, it's good that we have a forum where different views can be shared. And that's where I think the written word is better than a spoken argument.
You're right.
Or a podcast, because it gives us some distance.
Because you can read it and think about it before you have anyone to tell about it. Like, you have to actually listen, not think, but with your eyes. Listen with your eyes. You can't sit there and jump to telling someone about it. You have to sit through that whole paragraph and read it.
Well, we're also using different parts of our brain to process the information, if we read it and then if we speak it. Because often when we're speaking, we short circuit the deep thinking parts of our brain.
So I do think, okay, so first off, if someone's in public domain, as many of the authors are that have these issues from the 19th century, then they're not getting your money. So you can go in there, read their book, whether it's on Gutenberg or you get it on the library or whatever, and you're not giving them any money. I think there are books that should not be read aloud. And I also think that there's something that, you can take on yourself when you do. I think people should be judged for reading these books. No, I don't. I think,
well, also because people filter bad things out. Like, a lot of these problematic authors are damn good writers. They tell good stories, and they drag you into their fictional world, and they move the action along, and they can be rousing good stories that have occasional elements of ew. Also, it's a matter of age. I read stuff when I was in my teens and 20s, and I would, okay, and then I read them, and I go back down, and you go, oh, hell no. Because I understand the ew factor, whereas I didn't understand a lot of this stuff when I was younger.
Which is why
maybe I was a clueless idiot. I won't argue that point.
No. But it's experience, Brian. For example, that book. A lot of young women love that book, right? I'm not taking that away from them. But I was older, and I was my mother, and I saw things in a completely different perspective when I read it. It did not seem right to me at all. So let's take on a couple of these questions and we'll have to
Things along.
Yeah, we can't speed them along, Brian, because I don't get to say what I want to say. Okay, Dave wants to know, as a science fiction lover, enjoyer, would you say that Mary Shelley's Frankenstein is the first science fiction book?
In the modern sense, yes, possibly. But if you've look at the history of science fiction, which I have, I mean, this has been a popular topic. What was the first science fiction novel or the first science fiction story? And you can go back to the ancient Greeks, where there was, I can't remember the names, filled a bunch of flasks with water. And when the morning sun hit it, it turned into dew, and dew rises. Therefore, it allowed them to float up into the heavens. There are any number of stories like that that predate Frankenstein.
So maybe in the printed world?
I would make the, you know, it was perhaps the first mass market science fiction. And I will point out that once people, and Mary Shelley wrote it under a pseudonym. And when it was found out that she was a woman, the literary world lost their collective ignorant minds. And basically went out of print because the moronic establishment couldn't handle a woman dealing with such sensitive topics. Oh, the horror.
Even though they're the ones that give birth and have to deal with the dead people.
The first modern science fiction would be Jules Verne. Because his was sciencey science fiction. I remember decades ago, as I taught an introductory physics class, and part of it was mechanics, and I would try to come up with interesting problems. And one of the ones I looked at was from Jules Verne's From the Earth to the Moon, where they have a spaceship shot out of a cannon, if you know that one. And he was very precise in his description. He put numbers to everything. And if you put those numbers into the equations of motion, they all work. You do achieve escape velocity. Not by much, but as old Jules, canny old Frenchman that he was, had obviously worked through the math. Now, what he ignored, which is fair, for a science fiction adventure novel, is the effect of being shot out of a cannon. The humans inside would be turned into a thin layer of paste at the bottom of the of the shell, because the G-forces were like 10,000 G's or some such insane thing, which you could work out from the same equations of motions. So Jules Verne obviously knew, but he chose to overlook it for the sake of the story.
And as we say, Brian, what is it that we say? The story is everything.
We live for the story, we exist for the story.
Okay. Robin would like to know, hi, Brian, would you ever consider writing a book incorporating Newfoundland, like Vikings of the Day, or maybe a small town encountering werewolves and stuff? That would be pretty awesome, I think. Well, the Accursed North is sort of, I mean, it's in a rural area, but it's
northern Ontario.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, because I know Ontario better. Like my first books, which were a pair of political adventure thrillers, took place in, North Bay, Ottawa area.
You can mention them and hold them up.
Darkness creeps forth, and darkness comes reaping.
We can't see the covers, but
yeah, well, because they're not very good covers.
Did you change those covers? Are those covers that you changed?
No, they were the original covers. These were the first two books I ever wrote. This is the first one, Darkness Creeps Forth. And this is Darkness Comes Reaping. And the cover is frost patterns that I took pictures of the frost on my window. Because it was a double glazed window where the is where the seal went, so you could get some very pretty frost on it, on the inside. And it and I did that, and I learned how to apply color to it, and I thought that was kind of cool.
So first of all, I think we need to know that Brian loves his life. He's doing something almost every minute that makes him happy, and that you prefer to live near the location so that you can get the actual feel of it for a book.
Yeah, Newfoundland is a place that has always called to me in some ways, mainly because I listen to a lot of East Coast music. It's like
of course.
A great big sea.
You're not going to move anytime soon because...
No, well, I can't now because I'm too old and their healthcare system is even worse than
Ontario's. This is what happened to us with Nova Scotia and David's even younger. So, yeah, it's a big thing. Susan, author Susan Marcus would like to say, in the U.S., a lot of book banning has affected public schools and libraries.
And unfortunately, that's true. Starting to get some traction here in Canada. The worst, I mean, if somebody objects to a book, great, don't let your child read it, but you have no right to let no one else's
child. No, you do not have a right to control what someone else is reading. This is important. And I would also like to say that goes backwards. You know, I don't find them great gift Christmas gifts because somebody might give you a book you don't want to read. So just
I do that all the time. Anytime I come out with a new book, everybody in my family gets a copy of it.
Oh, yeah, but it's different.
No, because they use it as to squash flies, I'm sure. I don't think anyone's ever read any of my books. But that's family.
No, it is, unfortunately. But the pendulum is also penduling back in a...
Pendulum?
It's a mess. Well, okay, this is the point. If you believe in freedom of speech, in freedom of press, and in freedom of expression, you need to show both sides. And some people don't want one side showing, and some people don't want the other side showing. So it's not about what team you're on. It's about putting those opinions out there. And it's
a question of good faith, too. Becomes, so both sides have a reasonable amount of good faith and a certain degree of common ground that works. Like when I was in high school, decades ago.
No, but I know. But I mean, this is what the problem is.
Yeah, it's a high school library, for example, had copies of Mein Kampf, the English translation. And everybody was fine. Kids, read this all you want. And so
because
I did.
Showed,
and I said, what drooling moron wrote this? And yes, I showed it to my friends. And we all agreed. These are the rantings of a drooling moron.
We had a copy in our house so that we would understand what not to follow. This is as you're saying this. It is sometimes people have to read it instead of, you know, maybe if everybody had to read that book instead of listening to YouTube videos. There is not that I have any problems with YouTube videos. But they would not be, you know, jumping on bandwagons all the time, and they would have to read books. They make you think, they make you
it's like read, you know, it's like read Karl Marx, read The Little Red Book of Mao Zedong. I remember that I bought that as when I was a teenager, and my parents were horrified, said, don't let anybody see you read that, as they might think you're a communist. I just want to know.
Yeah, no. Which in today's day and age with the e-books, it gives you so much. I mean, even on the computer, Dave used to come back from the road and say, Vicky, I just really hope no one ever checks your browsing history. It was like just open to information and everything. There are so many things to be curious about. You could just learn until you explode into atoms and become something for someone else to learn about. Like this, you know, I read this or I believe this or whatever the case may be is so constricting. So claustrophobic making.
I just want to point out here that I just want to preface this that Vicky and I have had arguments for a long time. So, but I will freely say that her show Fika, I think, serves a public good because it exposes people to a lot of different writers in different topics and discusses how the authors interact with their books, I think, to an extent and to a level that's very rare. So, cool. You know, thank you, Vicky, for the show.
Okay, I'm done now, everyone. It was nice for you to show up. I have to say thank you for saying that, Brian. It means a lot. And yes, we disagree about some things, but I think core-wise, we're pretty cool. Okay. Oh, Robin wants to know how you made that wooden model on your bench. Do you have a laser burner?
That's actually a kit that you can buy. I forget the name of the company. I don't have the manual handy. But they have a gazillion different kits. They're all laser cut out of plywood. Very thin. I'm pretty sure it's bamboo plywood. And of varying degrees of complexity.
Oh, I've got one. Just a second.
That I haven't put together yet. It's this sort of thing. Rocker.
Oh, so it's like, yeah, no. I know those kits.
Yeah, yeah.
I've seen them in my house. I am going to have to use that in a reel. Okay, so everyone's going to see your big head over and over again. Not that your head is big, but it's just big today because Susan would like to know.
Yeah, in its day, Daedalus and Icarus could be considered science fiction. It could be considered fantasy. It could be considered a morality story. Like, children, obey your parents or you will fall to your death. Which, you know, when you think about it, a lot of the fairy tales involve naughty children. And they suffer the consequences of.
Well, they're tales of caution. They're not. I mean, that's the point. You wanted something bad to happen so that people would learn their lesson and not go do those things. And then they made them all flowery so the kids wouldn't get scared.
Well, sometimes it's. Looking back, sometimes it's a way of having a softened view of a horrific thing. Like, you think about the story of Hansel and Gretel.
Have you read
the woodcutter takes his kids out to the forest and he gets them lost and walks away. Well, that really happened in those days because there was famine, and if the parents didn't have any food, they sacrificed the kids.
Yeah,
and no, that was a real thing that happened.
There was you know, and they would put the stepmother, because real mothers would do that, but that was a little harder to digest. So, Okay, so we're going to jump to Robin's comment because we're on the bench and literally about everything.
Yes, it is, Robin.
It is a 20. And then he's not even letting me read the question. So that on, if you're listening, Brian has a Buck Rogers helmet on his. That's the one you made, right?
Yep. Okay. That's a phone.
And one more comment from Janice Richardson. Also, offer. I've read all your books, Brian. You have a great series of science fiction for science fiction lovers. You are a gifted writer, which makes you a better person than me because I've only read two of your series. So, and I haven't quite finished the one. So that is it. So I'm just going to turn off comments now. I wanted to quickly, because people are still asking, what is Fika? And Fika is basically a break in the day where you have coffee and tea and sweets. It is a Swedish custom, but it's more than just a coffee break. It's sort of an intangible that you can't really understand till you experience it. So it's more about conversation and being with friends and getting them to know them better like we did today. Brian, thank you. We're going to schedule another one of these, and because they were fun and it went fast, and I didn't get to say half of what I wanted to say. So,
not necessarily a bad thing, Vicky.
And therein lies the problem, people. He speaks nicely and then he throws it away. Okay, I've had my share. So you take care. And I want to play the Mr. Dress Up music while I make goodbye. But I won't. Take care. Okay. I will see the rest of you next week. Thanks for listening, everyone. And until then, may your coffee be hot and your story sweet. Take care.